Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw, which, of course, is the go-home show, go-home Raw show, anyway, for Saturday's Elimination Chamber at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on our conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Well, I guess if you've read the show's title, you know that I was quite a big fan of last night's Monday Night Raw. I'm not saying it was perfect. I do have a few points of contention that we'll be bringing up in this hour. But for the most part, folks, Raw felt like it was great again. And we're seeing now some changes that you may not have noticed at first, or you may not really notice at all. They're minor things, just pacing, timing, how they go from one thing to another. And it really makes a difference. Now, there are a lot of people out there who don't understand how the little small things that really don't have a ton to do with in-ring competition or whatever make a big difference in the programming itself. And we're seeing this in Raw now, I think, in a much bigger way than we have in a long time. And one of the things that you'll obviously notice is a match the caliber of Cody Rhodes versus Drew McIntyre obviously would be the main event pretty much of any Monday Night Raw. This Monday Night Raw, however, it opened the show. And I think that says a lot because it jumped right into the show. You had no long, drawn-out, 10-minute dialogues going back and forth. It was strictly action from basically minute one. And I remember saying to myself, wow, they're going to start with this match? And I thought, well, this is going to be a one-minute match that leads nowhere. It's going to lead to some main event where there's going to be tag teams involved and crapola. And it didn't. It didn't. And I remember saying to myself, this feels different now. This Raw almost feels like a pay-per-view. It actually feels like we're going to see something special tonight. And I remember them saying, and remember, we still have Jey Uso versus Gunther coming up, saying, we have the Battle Royal to decide the final woman in the Elimination Chamber. And I'm saying, geez, this feels like a little mini pay-per-view before the pay-per-view. And that's never a bad thing. Never a bad thing. So let's get right to it, because we did have a little bit of a recap on the Drew McIntyre and Cody Rhodes feud. But it was short-lived. It was foreign. And we jump right into it with what I think stole the show. I mean, listen, you can say Gunther and Jay was great, and it was. Not denying that it was. This match, well, it had fans almost immediately chanting, this is awesome. And we're having just a little trouble with the phone line, so hang in here one second. We're going to be trying to fix some things here, hopefully. There we go. Anyway, listen, these guys really, really, for what it was, which is a Monday Night Raw opening match, Drew McIntyre, who's in the Elimination Chamber, and Cody Rhodes, who's on his way to WrestleMania with a big match, they pulled out all the stops. They didn't dog it. They did a fantastic job. Fans were chanting, this is awesome. It really was awesome. And the thing that made it great, I think, at least to me, was that we really didn't know who was going to win this. I mean, it was a 6-1, half a dozen of the other thing, right? How do you have Cody Rhodes lose, is my thought, when he's scheduled for one of the biggest matches of his life? How does he lose? But then, likewise, how in the world do you have Drew McIntyre lose when he's going into the Elimination Chamber? So I really thought we were going to have some ridiculous interference, which we did. But, I mean, I really thought we were going to have something that was going to lead to you two guys have to coexist in a tag team match. And that didn't happen. Really didn't happen. Yes, we did get the interference of Solo and Jimmy Uso. But here's why this was a fantastic idea. Normally, I don't like these interference matches. This mimicked exactly what happened to Cody Rhodes at WrestleMania. Exactly what happened to him. So it underlined the notion that, hey, this could happen again at WrestleMania. This is exactly what Seth Rollins was talking about. You could literally do the same exact thing as happened last year. And while it did that, it also underlined Drew McIntyre's insincerity when it comes to saying, well, I'm not really doing anything that for fans to boo me. I'm just being misunderstood. I'm attempting to give you the best matches and the best champion. Well, he's the one who complained that he got ripped off by the Bloodline. And now when he sees the Bloodline's interference, he takes advantage of it. So this actually had a purpose. This interference actually had a purpose. And for that reason, I think it was a great ending. Now we had Cody Rhodes attacked after looking like he was hurt, obviously, and he's backstage at the trainers, and Seth Rollins comes in, really doesn't say anything, just kind of gives him that look of, what did I tell you? What did I tell you was going to happen? So this leaves a very, very open-ended storyline, which I like very much, and I really think the WWE did a fantastic job, absolutely fantastic job of this match, when they could have blew it. So listen, when we know they screw up, we give them hell. This time, everything was fine. Yeah, the phone lines are acting weird. I have Mike on the chat room. Try again, Mike, because the phone lines should be open now. Should be open. We were having trouble with them earlier. Blog Talk was doing maintenance. We weren't sure we were going to be able to get the show on the air at the right time, but it did pop back on. You should be able to call now, from what I'm being told. You should be able to get through. So anyway, Cody Rhodes and Drew McIntyre light it up, and it makes Raw feel like if this is the opening match, we're going to be in for a really good night of entertainment, right? It set the stage for what was going to be one of the better Raws in recent memory. Now we have the elimination qualifier, and the participants for that was Shayna Baszler, Zoe Stark, Xia Li, Valhalla, Tegan Nox, Natalya, trying to remember them all, Indy Hartwell, Candice LeRae, Maxine Dupree, Ivy Nile was in there, Electra Lopez was in there, right? Katana Chance and Mee Chin. Selena Vega was in there, obviously Chelsea Green, and Isla Dawn and Alba Fire, and then the returning Raquel Rodriguez. But here's the thing, folks. No Jade Cargill. Now, I'm telling you that the WWE literally released Jade Cargill as a member of the Elimination Chamber. They released the graphic. Quickly took it down, but they did release the graphic where Jade Cargill was literally shown as the last member of the Elimination Chamber. So they've changed their mind. Now, I don't know whether they changed their mind based on Raquel Rodriguez is ready, but I doubt it, because they had to know she was going to be ready. This didn't happen yesterday. So they had to know she was going to be ready. So my thought is that they're changing their mind quickly on Jade Cargill, and I'm telling you, I told you this ahead of time. How long has it been since Jade Cargill has been in the WWE? And how many matches have we seen her do? She's not ready. And they know she's not ready. And they put her in the Royal Rumble, and they gave her a spot or two, and they said, yeah, I don't know. So the last thing they're going to do is put her in an elimination chamber with a very, very strong chance of, you know, screwing things up and getting hurt or hurting somebody, especially on the road to WrestleMania here. Jade Cargill so far has been a bust. So far, she has contributed next to nothing to completely nothing to the roster, and for the life of me, I don't understand why. Okay, now I'm hearing it's still telling people to call back later. Listen, I don't want to spend this entire show ranking on Blog Talk, but this is getting old. Blog Talk Radio can't seem to get out of their own way. They were down for over a month, and in that month's worth of time, apparently did exactly nothing. Because now that you've been up about a month, all of a sudden you need more severe maintenance, and your lines aren't working, and this isn't working, and this feature's not working. What in the actual hell is going on? What the hell is going on? I just don't understand it. I really don't. Hopefully, just keep trying, Mike. Hopefully, you'll be able to get in. But if not, then I'll try to relay your opinions here on the chat room. It's just a nightmare. Just a nightmare. Anyway, the Battle Royal itself was pretty short. Nothing horrible. Raquel Rodriguez dominated, obviously. And Raquel Rodriguez wins. There's a couple little branches on the tree with Valhalla eliminating Maxine Dupri, so that's probably going to continue their feud, and Zelina Vega and Electra Lopez were going at each other, and, you know, Baszler and Stark kind of stuck together as a team to the bitter end. So there were some branches on the tree here, which was nice to see. But here's where I think they blew it. I think they made it obvious. As soon as we saw Raquel Rodriguez, well, she's winning. Who else? I was waiting for Jade Cargill to show, and when she didn't, and they actually started the match, I said, okay, well, then obviously Raquel Rodriguez is winning. And she did, which, okay, you know, I can see her going into the Elimination Chamber. Just that coming back with that big fanfare and everything, it was like, it was telegraphing it to me a little bit. Still in all, you used it for good purpose. You furthered a couple of feuds. So I can't complain on that. It was entertaining enough. We then get to this interview with Rhea Ripley and Nia Jax. And here's where weaknesses are exposed. Rhea Ripley is now forced to do an interview in which she's not doing Judgment Day mommy type stuff, where she's basically just being a dominant biatch and, bragging on herself. And she's not good at it. She's a one-trick pony when it comes to this character, and this character has to stay this character. The problem is when this character fights a heel and you're trying to get some sympathy in your own home country, you don't want to be that character. So now this is why Rhea Ripley is better off a heel. And if she's not going to be a heel, then she's got to be a face who really just doesn't change her persona at all, just the people she fights. Because this Rhea Ripley is not interesting. And as uninteresting as she was, Nia Jax was worse. Nia Jax is nobody's actress. And she comes across like she's reading her script off the palm of her hand. It's not good. Not good at all. This was a weird segment. And if anything, it made me nervous because it made me think, I don't know if Rhea Ripley has a major career as a face when they want to turn her. Because this Rhea Ripley, I didn't find very interesting, and I don't think fans are going to either. You got to be able to maintain a little bit of your old character and then add that little bit of face charisma to it. Roddy Piper did it well. You know, you had that maniacal Roddy Piper, and that was what made him popular as a heel. And when you wanted to turn him face, if you took that all away, it wouldn't work. So Roddy Piper understood that, and he crossed that line where you say, well, he's still the same old Roddy Piper with just a couple little changes. Still used the ball bat and busted up the flower shop. Still washed Jimmy Hart's mouth out with mouthwash, right? Tied him up. He still did the same things he always did. He just changed who he did it to. I would caution that you don't want to make Rhea Ripley a sympathetic character. Rhea Ripley's always got to stay that confident, I'm kicking anybody's ass, I'm better than anybody type person. She's always got to walk that gray line heel. If she does not do that, I don't think she's going to be that interesting, and I don't think it's going to work out. Nia Jax, on the other hand, as far as I'm concerned, she's a one-trick pony. As soon as she gets pinned, I think Nia Jax's worth to this company is less. Now, Mike's agreeing with me in the chat room saying, got to be that Roddy Piper type character. Absolutely. Absolutely. She can't change and be this, when I first got in, I was trying to do everything the fans wanted, and I realized I had to do my own thing, but I'm very proud to do this. No. I'd have rather seen Rhea Ripley come in there and really just let Nia Jax have it. And the only time she really did is when she said, you're going to find out you're not good enough. But there was more. There was more she could have done. So I understand what they're doing here. I understand they're trying to give her a little bit of a face rub. But so far, in my opinion, not working that well. Hopefully they correct that. We'll see. Now, we did a weird thing with R-Truth and doing a taped interview with, Jackie Redmond? And it was bizarre, to say the least. It was funny, I'll tell you that, but it was bizarre. R-Truth is one of those people. What can you say about him? R-Truth is one of those people who will be able to contribute to professional wrestling until the day he dies. Not necessarily in the ring, but he's going to be one of those people who you can always find something for him to do that fans will be like, that's cool. I'm fine with that. I'm down with that. Because he's extraordinarily adaptable. And there's not a lot of people that are. We've just talked about how Rhea Ripley's not that adaptable. She's got to be that mommy dominant character, or she's not that interesting. R-Truth can be all over the place. His comedic timing, his ability to get sympathy from the crowd, his ability to just come into a scene and change it from a tense scene to a funny scene, or a plain scene into a scene that you say, oh, well, that's going to have some importance, is huge. He's extremely, extremely good at that. So, I give that segment a bizarre rating. It was bizarre, but it was still a really good segment. As far as getting back to the Nia Jax thing for 1 minute, what did Nia Jax literally say? I'm bigger than you. What the hell does that have to do with anything? She's not substantially bigger than her. That's number one. And number two, she's lost to smaller people. So her whole basis for why she's going to beat Rhea Ripley is I'm bigger than you. Well, you're bigger than Chad Gable, too. Let's see you beat him. It was illogical. It was badly executed. I didn't like any part of that. I'm sorry. I just didn't. So we then get to R-Truth, The Miz, and DIY versus The Judgment Day. And this is the one for me, folks, that, well, this told me a big story. Mike's saying, is she long for the company when Nia Jax gets beat? Yeah, they'll probably keep her around. I think her worth is going to be greatly diminished. Right now, she's like, oh, well, who could possibly conquer her? Once she's conquered, I don't know. Then what? It's like El Gigante, right? Oh, who could ever beat this guy? He's a freak of nature. He's a giant. And then he's beaten. You're like, okay, well, there's nothing for us to do. I don't know if Nia Jax has the chops to really find a different avenue for her career once she gets beat by someone. I don't know. We'll see. The WWE writer is going to have to try hard. Anyway, Judgment Day against DIY and The Miz and R-Truth. And there's so much in here to unpack. Let's just start with this. DIY is a fantastic twosome, right? They work extremely well together. They're extremely athletic. They are top-notch professional wrestlers. Nobody cares. You could put them with the two most popular people in the world, and people would be like, whatever. I don't know why, but it's not working for them. It's just not. They tried to make him run in and make the save for R-Truth, figuring, well, if you save R-Truth, the fans will go nuts over you. They didn't. Well, if you side with The Miz, then the fans will go nuts with you. They didn't. Fans respect them, and they realize they're going to bring them a decent match, but they're not that over. R-Truth is so over. It's sick. And it's based on not really much more than a few comedy angles. But then what did we see last night? We saw a 52-year-old guy literally keep pace with Damian Priest. And no, before you all say, well, Priest worked to his level. No, he didn't. Damian Priest did not give him any rest time or any whatever. Neither did anybody else in that Judgment Day match. They could have, and they would have, if R-Truth asked for it. You know, I'm older. Don't push me too much. Don't run me too hard. He was keeping up with them. He was pushing them. He was running them. Unbelievable. Between him and Dustin Rhodes, it's like they found the fountain of youth. But I think R-Truth more than Dustin. Because Dustin never really had a fast-paced style or a style that was overly energetic anyway. So for him to be able to do what he does for a longer period of time is somewhat understandable. But here's R-Truth doing splits and jumping around like he's 25 years old and he's barely breaking a sweat. And I'm saying, keeping up with JD McDonagh and Dominic Mysterio. And they're not going down to his level. He's just keeping up with theirs. Really, that's amazing. Just amazing. And he was the most over guy in the match. And that's why the ending was so good. Damian Priest had to do this. If you're going to keep the heat on Judgment Day, you had to have this ending, and you did. So I don't have a problem. I know a lot of people wrote me saying, oh, man, this should have been the spot that R-Truth upset the Judgment Day or upset Damian Priest. Nah, let it play out. Let it play out. There's more coming. And I can promise you it's going to be a fun ride. So a decent match. all in all, R-Truth obviously was the one who, you know, stole the show. We did have this weird thing where, like, some UFC guy called out Conor McGregor. Now, this goes to show you, now that they've merged, you're going to get, like, these little cross promotions where we just happen to have a UFC guy in the audience. He's just going to grab a microphone and cut a two-minute promo. If you like it, you like it. If you don't, you don't. Mark me in the camp of I don't. And, of course, R-Truth just keeps doing the John Cena's my childhood hero thing, even though he's older than John Cena, which is funny. But did you hear the crowd when R-Truth finally got the tag? I mean, it's amazing. It's just amazing how over he is. We then get to Becky Lynch. Becky Lynch actually cuts a decent promo, one of her better promos, in my opinion. Basically said, it's going to be the man against Mammy. This is the way it's going to be. And she gave Rhea Ripley her props. She explained very simply how they're different, but in some ways the same. It was a very good promo, and then the nightmare began. One by one, every single one of the women in the Elimination Chamber came out, starting with Liv Morgan, who aggravates me beyond belief on the mic. Liv Morgan reminds me of one of those women who you say, oh, my God, you know, she's beautiful and she's this and she's that and the other thing. But, oh, man, you know, I can't take her constant yapping. That's exactly for me. When she takes that microphone, I'm like, Jesus, turn the sound down. I know what it's going to be, and I don't want to hear it. It's so poorly delivered, and it's so annoying, and her voice is so shrill. I can't. I just can't. Then Raquel Rodriguez comes out, barely gets to say a word before Naomi comes out. Naomi has re-reminded me that she is not good on the mic. I don't know why Naomi is not good on the mic, because I've seen Naomi in an actual film, and she was very good. She was actually very good in the film, but she is not good on the mic. Never really was. I can't figure it out. I can't figure it out. Then comes Tiffany Stratton. She is good on the mic. Then Bianca Belair comes out, and the fans really pop for Bianca Belair. And just to see Bianca Belair and Naomi in that ring makes me want to see that match very badly. I hope at some point in the Elimination Chamber we get to see them for a extended period of time, because I really want to see it. I also think Tiffany Stratton, while I don't think her wrestling is up to par right now and she needs some time, her ring presence and her mic skills are really good. She will definitely be a future big, big star in the business if she doesn't get hurt or whatever. But here's the problem. While they're all arguing, here comes Nia Jax. And as God as my witness, the WWE made a decision that Nia Jax will destroy all six women who are going to go into that Elimination Chamber for a chance to face the champion at WrestleMania at the same time. Now, I know what they were thinking. Here's exactly what they were thinking. We want to show that Nia Jax has a very strong chance of beating Rhea Ripley, and that Nia Jax may be the one these women are facing, not Rhea Ripley. We want to push that on the crowd. Don't count on it being Rhea Ripley. We could be setting something up with Nia. Look what Nia's doing to all of them. Here's why it was a lousy idea. You made all six of these women look like together, they cannot beat Nia Jax. Yet Rhea Ripley's going to do it. Saturday. You managed to make all six women in this elimination chamber look inadequate. And that's not acceptable. See, I thought Raquel Rodriguez should have been given a little bit more mic time when she said, lady, you're missing one important thing. We may not be fighting Rhea Ripley. Nia Jax is in that match, and Nia Jax very well might win that match. And if that's the case, we got to deal with a whole different kind of champion, a much bigger, a much more powerful champion. I thought she was making good points, and she was the one selling that Nia might win. Now, if you wanted Nia Jax to come out while everybody was brawling, which in a couple of women were brawling when she took them out, but still, if you wanted Nia Jax to come out while everybody was at each other's throats and pick one or two apart, take off, fine. She didn't do that. She flattened them all, every one of them. Now, I heard people saying it doesn't really hurt them. What do you mean it doesn't hurt them? You just had Raquel Rodriguez say, I'm the only one powerful enough to stand up to her. She didn't get a punch in. Becky Lynch didn't get a punch in. Bianca Belair didn't get a punch in. What do you mean it didn't hurt them? Destroyed them. So they can't get it done 6-on-1. But when Rhea Ripley gets it done, we are expected to believe whoever wins that chamber is a real threat to Rhea Ripley. That doesn't make any sense. It was unnecessary. One more of these unforced errors that we talk about constantly. And I just don't understand why they did it. It was definitely the worst spot in Raw. Definitely the worst spot. Bianca Belair, by the way, reminded fans that she's undefeated at WrestleMania. That's true. And Liv Morgan did remind Becky Lynch that she was the last person to defeat Rhea Ripley, which that is also true. So at least they did stick to that. We then got Chad Gable versus Ivar. And it was totally singles competition. There was no Alpha Academy, and there was no Valhalla. This was a fantastic match. Both of these guys are fantastic workers. And while we all marvel about how good Chad Gable is, and he is, and how strong he is for his size, and he is, Ivar, for his size, is very, very strong in the cardio department and extraordinarily agile. He's a real throwback to some of the 80s wrestlers who, you know, a lot of these 80s wrestlers weren't that agile. They were big and powerful, and some of them could do, like Vader and things, could do certain things. But, man, Ivar, and I got news. He should do that sit-down splash as the finisher, because that sit-down splash from the top rope looks 100 times more devastating than the moonsault. When he hit Chad Gable with that sit-down splash, I said, well, it's not only is it over, but I'm not 100% sure that Chad Gable's not legit injured. It looked phenomenal. The amount of body control and timing it takes to do that move and do it as well as he did it is incredible. Ivar is a very underutilized talent. So was Chad Gable. But Ivar is a very, very underutilized talent and somebody you could really, really push if you wanted to. Now, in this particular case, it's Chad Gable who gets the win, obviously. But... you know, does it hurt Ivar? No, because he's had his wins over Chad Gable. I just think this was a fantastic match. Fantastic. Both of these guys proved they're an important part of this show, and I hope we get to see them in the future with a push. Anyway. We get to the Intercontinental Championship match. Now, I want to say ahead of time that there were reports and very credible reports saying this was the moment that Jey Uso was in fact going to win his first solo title. I was always skeptical. I said, if they're going to do it, they're going to do it at a pay-per-view. They're not going to do it on Raw. But then I thought and said, well, maybe. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they will. Maybe they will. It certainly started to build up like that was going to happen. And then after what seemed like 20 spears by Jey Uso, it appeared as though Gunther was done. And the bell rings, only for us to see that it was rang by Jimmy Uso, who stopped the two count. And this didn't even lead to the ending. This is what made this so good. You say, oh, I get it. Now Jay's going to be distracted. He's going to yell at Jimmy for a minute. Gunther's going to get up and hit his finisher, and it's over. No. Gunther did get up, but Jey was able to avoid it, and he almost pinned him again. But the distraction continued, and eventually Gunther wins. Now, a lot of people are disappointed, I know. But I told you from the beginning that their plan for WrestleMania is Jimmy versus Jey. And if you're going to do it the right way, then you really don't need that to be a championship match. That's brother versus brother, a blood feud and a long time in the making, and it doesn't need a title to be important, so it would be a waste. So probably that was the right decision. It does make me scratch my head as to who the hell is going to take on Gunther at WrestleMania. That is a little unusual. I don't know, a lot of people saying it's going to be Chad Gable again. They're going to push him again for that moment. Maybe. Maybe. We'll see. Either way, fantastic match. I know there's a lot of people who got down on Gunther last night. A lot of people wrote me and said, does he do anything except chop you? Because for 8 straight minutes, he's done nothing but chop Jey Uso. Does he know no other moves? Yeah, look, I know that can get a little old, but that's his style. His style is he's trying to wear you down and break your spirit and hurt you, and then he can finish you off in a couple of different ways. I'm not going to get down on him for that. Psychology of this match was still very strong. When it appeared as though Gunther had this well in hand, he hit his finisher, Jey Uso kicked out. Gunther clearly was shocked, clearly was frustrated, and then started to make some mistakes. When he got hurt with the first spear, then you gradually saw him getting less and less confident and trying to avoid instead of attack. And when he started to avoid rather than attack, he was getting caught. He was on the verge of being beaten. He told a very good story. So I'm not going to kill him for just chopping people. Now, the Jimmy Uso thing, is it a great story? It's not a great story because I don't really know why Jimmy hates Jey so much. I know there's the jealousy thing of you're not going to get the belt unless, you know, it's a tag team belt with me. I get that. But you're going to have to expand this a little more. And I think what you're going to have to do is say that Jimmy is the one who wants to be the first one to win a singles title. He's not going to allow Jey to do it. Because the bloodline really hasn't interacted much with Jey. At all. Not at all. Still a fantastic match. I think that they both did a great job. They worked very well together. I thought they worked very well together. And to be honest, I thought this was one of Raw's best shows. It made me actually look forward to the Elimination Chamber, which is exactly what it's supposed to do. The wrestling, for the most part, was really, really solid, with Drew McIntyre and Cody giving way more than TV matches usually give, with Chad Gable and Ivar giving way more than TV matches usually give, and with Gunther and Jey Uso giving way more than TV matches usually give. I got the feeling from this whole entire pay-per-view, this whole entire Raw, that it was like a little mini pay-per-view. And I don't think you can ask for better than that. So, did I hate the women's thing where they all came out and yelled about how they're going to win the Elimination Chamber and got squashed by Nia Jax? Yes, I hated that. I thought that was wretched. But that one segment is not enough for me to even knock this down a peg enough to give it just an A. This is an A-plus show, folks, all the way. This is the WWE cranking on all cylinders. They never let off the pacing. They didn't waste a lot of time on nonsense, except for the UFC guy grabbing a microphone. And they didn't endlessly go over what you just saw. They kept the action fast-paced. They let the wrestlers really do what they wanted to do, and they didn't hold them back to any extent. And I just thought this is the way Monday Night Raw is always supposed to be. So for that reason, I'm sorry we couldn't get our co-hosts in here to give their opinion. My rating this week is an A+. I think this show accomplished everything it needed to accomplish. One or two little sidetracks, but nothing that I'm going to kill them for. So an A+ show for me. And I'm greatly looking forward to seeing what they do on Friday night, because if they can match this, the Elimination Chamber should be a hell of a lot of fun. We'll see you on Friday with the weekly wrap-up.
You're listening to WrestleChat Radio. WrestleChat Radio is a savage.